You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome. It is the Anfield Wrap on a very, 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 very wet Monday morning in Liverpool. It is windswept and rain swept out there, but walking on through both the wind and the rain, I have with me Ian's, Ryan and Salmon, and the greatest living Southerner, Harriet Pryor, to discuss Liverpool 2, Brighton 2. And to discuss it, we're going to do it a little bit differently when we get into the meat of it in a minute. I want to discuss it in three phases, and I want to discuss each of the three phases that I think there are during the match. But first, we have to deal with Ian, Ryan, the savage reality. It's two dropped. If Liverpool had drawn 2-2 with Brighton, having been 2-0 down, and the game finished 2-2 with the last goal scored in the 66th minute, I'd feel like it was two dropped. As it is, Liverpool are 2-0 ahead in the game, and it finishes 2-2. It is two dropped.
100%. And I think, though, the context is important. And it feels like, you know, there's lots of things to be really pleased about, Neil, with this Liverpool team. You know, notwithstanding the result last week, go to United, battered them everywhere, got the best player in the world currently playing his football at Anfield, and we're playing some really, really good stuff. But the inability at times to manage football matches is one that's sticking in the throat a little bit. So it's not the first time Liverpool have led a game and then found themselves pegged back. In the league, you know, you've got Brentford, City, the Brighton results at the weekend, and in the Champions League, where they've overcome being pulled back, they've still been pulled back. So that's one where it's starting to worry a little bit.
It's five times.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they've been a little bit more expansive at times this season, and that's resulted in maybe one or two midfielders getting more goals than you'd expect, but it's also leaving us very, very open. And Brighton were a team that are far better coached than United the previous week. Graham Potter's done a brilliant job, and they exposed a number of weaknesses second half to the point where, if you've been really honest about it, there was a chance that Brighton could have won that game.
Oh, absolutely.
And you probably couldn't have had that many complaints. Yes, Liverpool were really good in the first phase of the football match, start really, really well. You know, Mo Salah kind of, you know, starts where he's left off, setting up a goal. It's really well taken. You know, Henderson, I think, starts the match pretty well, but then fades, as do many others. But you are just left with that air of being frustrated. You know, coming off the ground on Saturday, you can't help but feel frustrated, because it does feel, especially with how other results went, that Liverpool have missed a huge opportunity.
You felt it while it was happening, Harriet. I think this is the... Sometimes I've been at matches where you're 2-0 up and it's like a bolt from the blue. Someone bangs in a worldie and there's a set piece and you find yourself 2-2 and you peg back. What is rarer, certainly for this Liverpool side, is at the moment at which Brighton go 2-2, they deserve 2-2. And I think that that's something which is difficult to take, having emphatically deserved to be 2-0 down. I hasten to add, or more accurately, Liverpool deserved to be 2-0 up. You felt it whilst it was happening, and you felt like no one on the pitch was arresting what was going on, and no one on the sidelines was arresting what was going on.
I think every goal that went in was as it should have happened. Like, it all felt like it played out as it should have happened, depending on how both teams were playing at the time. And that's frustrating, because as a Liverpool fan, you never want to say they deserve to concede a goal, but I think actually they deserve to concede two, and then and maybe in the last sort of period of the game, they deserve to concede again, and we were lucky that we didn't. I came away, like Ian just said, with an overwhelming feeling and emotion of just pure frustration. I didn't know if I felt sad, if I felt, you know, what I really felt. Like, after the Man City game, when we came away with the same result, it was a strange sort of feeling, because you were like, okay, we can come away with that. We've taken a point, you know, it's sort of a level playing field. With Brighton, when you come from 2-0 up and then you're dropping points, it's just incredibly frustrating. And I think all the players and the manager said it after the game, that it felt more like a defeat. Having said that, like we've already said, Brighton deserve credit, because they played incredibly well. They stretched the pitch really well. I thought they managed to slow down the pace of the game in moments when we really could have done without it. And yeah, it's a point, and you know, we can't win 5-0 every week, and we've done it more this season than is probably you know, a good reality and a standard way to play. But we've come away from it, we've dropped 2 points, it doesn't feel good, but you know, that's the reality.
I agree with everything Harriet says, that apart from one thing, Ian. She said each goal happens possibly as it should. I actually think that there's three bits in the first half where Liverpool have hard lines. The Keita injury, obviously, you know, a player who's been important and is playing ever so well gets himself injured. The Mane disallowed goal where it ricochets up off his hand, but also their opener. I don't feel they do actually deserve that one at that moment. I think they go on and obviously deserve by the end of the game to do that. But I think at that moment, those three things happen in about a 20-minute spell. The disallowed goal and their opening goal happen within 6 minutes of each other. And it did feel in a really sort of quite punch to the gut emotional way, like there'd been a two-goal swing. You felt like we were 3-0 up and deserved to be 3-0 up. Yeah, and suddenly we went completely in half-time and it was only 2-1. Now, this Liverpool side, we talk about it coming back from adversity, but they are hard lines.
They are definitely hard lines, but I want to disagree with the fundamental on this. I don't believe it was 2 points dropped. I believe it was 2 points thrown away, completely thrown away. It was negligent. It should never have happened because we're better than this. We are better than the performance we saw after it went 2-1. We should have been 3-0 up. We deserve to be 3-0 up. I'm not saying the goal deserved stand. You know, yeah. From where I was, I'm main stand. I'm in line with the 18-yard box. It looked like a perfectly good goal. Couldn't figure out why they were looking for a handball. But when you watch it back on Match Today, Mane's walking around going, hit me arm, you know, lads.
Don't celebrate.
None of us saw that, did we? We were all busy celebrating. No. Yeah, he was like, this isn't going to count.
Yeah, this isn't going to count. Jumping up and down celebrating the absurdity of the goal. It's like the ricochet that Lallana, off Lallana's back a few seasons ago, where you think, that's stupid, but I'll take it. 2-0, 3-0. We felt like we should be 3-0 up. And that first 25 minutes, I know we're going to come back to this anyway, but again, we were playing like Brazil 1970. We were playing like the best team you have ever seen in your life. And we have done this five times recently where we'll do 25 minutes of the best team you've ever seen. And then we'll stop and we'll let the others come back into it for a bit. And it's kind of like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what the trigger is for this.
Do you think it's an energy thing?
It could be. I think
the players are starting so fast that then what's happening is they get into about 30.
Yeah, it seems to be that period, doesn't it, before half-time. We saw it in the Milan game particularly, that 5 minutes before it goes to half-time. It seems like something just switches off, and I don't know if it's because they've come out and Klopp said, right, come out hard and fast, and then you get to 40 or 35 and things sort of slow down and we can't keep up with the pace of the game, and they see that as an opportunity to fight back, and a lot of teams have done that.
I think very much. I think we are burning ourselves out, but it's happening repeatedly. So once it's happened twice, we need to address what we're doing. And yeah, starting off fantastically, playing fantastic football, hoping to bury teams is great if it works, but it didn't. And then the problem is that first goal at the time, you couldn't tell whether it was cross or shot. I thought it was a shot myself. Yeah. I thought it was a whirl. You know, sometimes
it's obviously a shot. Yeah, yeah. It's great.
When I had people saying around me, well, it's a cross, it's been mishit. But you watch back on Match of the Day and it's clearly a shot and it's fantastic. And sometimes you just have to sit there and applaud a worldie by another team because he's done something fantastic. And I think it is very much out of nothing. But then for the 5 minutes after that, our heads have gone completely. Our heads go completely until half time. We're sloppy. We're giving away passes all over the place. We look like a shadow of ourselves and we don't come back in the second half.
I mean, Brighton were probably a little bit unfortunate not to take the lead in the first minute. I mean, it's a good save from Alisson. When I see it back, it really is a good save. I think it's Solly Marsh who goes through very quick. And, you know, Liverpool recovered from that quite quickly and gained control of the match. And, you know, you are thinking it's 2-0, that it could be another one of them where it ends up being 4-5. You know, we look like we're in the mood. We've got a bit of a swagger about us. You know, the Mane disallowed one, it almost felt like Brighton deserved that to happen because they were really, really pushing the luck, playing it round. It looked like something could happen, such as that. But they get away with it. And the rules are a little bit mad around handball, we know that. But it goes against us and it's probably the right thing in the end.
I think if Salah kicks it in, it probably stands.
Well, it does. And that's where it's a bit moody and a bit mad, Neil. And we know that it's a defender's arm in that instance. It probably isn't a penalty if it ricochets up like that. So, it's one of them. But the Naby Keita injury... That hits us big because then Liverpool look like a team that have got no control of the midfield at all. And I'm not saying shape goes completely. I'm not saying it was perfect anyway, but it was okay. It was more than okay.
But Chamberlain does set up the second.
He does set up the second.
With a brilliant cross.
It's a brilliant cross. It's a brilliant ball. And as soon as it left his boot, you knew it was going to land on Mane's head, and it's a great header. And I thought Mane actually was one of the few players you can probably walk off the pitch thinking that he's done okay. I thought he was at it for most of the game. I think second half, I know we'll probably come to it later, there's not really anyone who's standing out, but first half I thought people like Mane were at it. I thought Jordan Henderson starts the match really well, but hugely fades to the point where he's insignificant. But in the first half I thought he was really good. Takes his goal really, really well. Sorry, Neil, go on.
No, I was about to say, I want to start there, and I'll come back to you with it. I think 0-35, that's the first phase. I think Liverpool are much the better side. Yeah. I think Henderson's the driving force in the match. I think he's through the middle of the pitch. Everything's going through him. The two midfielders are able, whether it is Keita or it is Chamberlain, to push into wider areas. He's got control of this great big rectangle that's around him. It's working really, really well, and I think that's what has the first 35 minutes mean that Liverpool are absolutely all over Brighton. They're trying to play out. They can't get out. At times, yeah. Liverpool are dominant in the game.
Yeah, I think that up to 35, we are really, really good. And I think Henderson's setting the tone for that. You know, he obviously gets the goal, which he takes really, really well. But then there's a brilliant ball down the line for Salah, which is just delicious. It really is. And he's doing all the bits that you'd expect him to do in that number six position. But that does change. And it does kind of, you know, coincide with Naby going off, really, which is just another... It's another kicking the balls for him, but it's one that we can't really be surprised at, because that is literally the story of his Liverpool career. Unfortunately, you see glimpses where you know there's a footballer in there. Now, we've seen it at Old Trafford. My God, he's brilliant at Old Trafford. Now, it's 9 out of 10. He's snapping into everything. He just looks great. And you're thinking, Naby, just a bit of momentum, kick on. And then he gets that injury. And Liverpool just look completely short in the middle of the park. And in Jones and in Chamberlain, I think... You know, I like Curtis Jones, but I think certain football matches suit him, and I think he needs a structure around him to get the very, very best out of him. And I would say similar for Chamberlain. You almost need that extra one, that Fabinho behind someone like a Jones or an Oxlade-Chamberlain to get the very best out of him, where they haven't got to worry as much about shape and what's going on in behind them, because there's no doubt, you know, it's quite easy at times to pick gaps when you've got a midfield of those three. And I think Henderson was doing his best, but it got to the point where he was just trying to put out too many fires, and Liverpool paid the price.
I think you're talking a lot there about positional play, which I completely agree with. But for me, it was the management of the ball. After that, after 30 minutes when we played really well, I just felt like we weren't, you know, on the ball play, especially players like Curtis Jones, we were sort of just giving away really... Like, he was trying to take a bit too much time, and then he was just getting four players around him and losing the ball in really key areas. And I thought that's what Brighton were quite good at, winning it back in key areas and then punishing us, essentially. And for Henderson, it was kind of the opposite for me, because I thought in the first 30 he was really good in his positional play. And then after that, he just seemed to not be in the right areas, and that's when we had so much space. And when you haven't got a Fabinho in behind you, I think we missed him so much. There's no doubt that we missed him so much against Brighton, and we really could have done with him. But you've got Curtis Jones and Oxlade-Chamberlain, who aren't defensively minded midfielders and aren't tracking back and finding those defensive positions, and then we're ultimately getting punished, and there's just so much space for Brighton to move into, and that's when they manage to score the two goals.
I agree with every single word, and I think it was every single player on the pitch was taking two touches instead of one. The whole game slowed down. Everybody was thinking about the ball, and they just weren't actually progressing as they'd been the first 35 minutes. I don't know how much of it is Henderson fading as much as him having to compensate for two lads who aren't doing the job that he needs one of them to do. And I'm not saying which of the two lads wasn't doing it. And we're undoubtedly going to have to come on to Curtis at some point to talk about how his game actually went, because I think we can point out that he had an absolute nightmare and is still a good footballer, and these two things aren't exclusive despite what social media seems to think.
I thought on Jones, there was a point just before half time, Ian, right in front of us where I sit in the lower centenary, and I looked at Jones and he looked shattered. Like, it was arms on leg stuff.
He's before half time. He's just come back from injury.
He's played the full midweek. He played the full midweek game pretty much. I think he trots off with 2 minutes to go, but he plays the bulk of the midweek League Cup game. And to me, I wonder, Ian, when we talk about the Keita injury, what we're also talking about is the loss of a sub from a Liverpool point of view.
That's
both
massive.
In terms of literally, he only gets to make three, so he's now down to two. But I think the other thing in it is if everything goes as it goes, but with Keita, I'm absolutely convinced Chamberlain comes on for Jones on 55 to 60, and that Liverpool might already have thought that before a ball was kicked, that might have been pre-programmed in. Because for me, Jones, and I think he stays on too long, and not off the basis of get him off, I think he's crap, more off the basis of, I just think he's shot. I think he's absolutely shattered, and we'd have been better off with almost any other footballer on the pitch, because they'd have had more legs at that point. For me, this is just a tiredness question, and it is a reminder that he is still a young footballer who's working out how to go game.
He's 20 years old. The amount we're asking from him as a 20-year-old, it was obvious that we needed to make a sub. We couldn't make a sub. Now, I'd gone for a pint beforehand, so I went to the toilet halfway through the first half, came back to my seat, and Naby sat down. and I have no idea what's happened. I still don't know what's happened because they didn't bother showing it on Match of the Day. So it's not impact. He pulls up, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's a hamstring, I think.
So it's hamstring. And it's if it is hamstring, then that could be a few weeks. So I think we've got, obviously, we're going to have to talk about the midfield issue as well as a larger thing. Curtis Jones, there's nobody on earth who knows more how unsatisfying Curtis Jones' game was than Curtis Jones. He's come off, you could see his body shape on the bench as he was sitting down. That's a lad who's not happy and knows that the game hasn't worked for him. Now, 3 weeks ago, we were talking about the Porto game, and that was one of the great European performances, and he actually bossed the whole game. He ran the whole thing. This, it didn't work for him. Now, it could be because him and Chamberlain basically do the same job, and what we need a Fabinho and a Henderson for either one of them to work.
The load that's on them in the middle of the park here, and I think, is absolutely massive. I think all the way through this season, with one possible exception around Thiago, plays the full game against Leeds, plays an hour against Crystal Palace, I think you're able to point at the thing that you've talked about at the very start, that everyone's talked about in the midfield. I think it's happened to whoever's been on the pitch at one point. Not quite as markedly as the way in which it goes against... I've literally forgotten the opponent against Brighton at the weekend. Not quite as marked as that. And in part maybe because of the excellence of Brighton. But I think the load that's on these midfielders every single game, even if it is just away at Preston with Chamberlain and Jones, because it is just three in there and they're expected to get through so much work. Man United, Jones comes off the bench, expected to get through so much work after Milner goes off injured, and he's putting it all in there. Henderson, the constant of the two league games, but again is left with, I'll say it again, it's like an enormous rectangle in the middle of the pitch he's responsible for, and then people get around. And it's interesting to me the manager changes it after sort of 65, but in that phase, 35 to 65, you can just see they can't get through the work, and no one's rushing back to help them, and then behind them the defensive line's going all over the place, frankly.
This is why, and you know, I'm not trying to be a smart ass here, but this is why I was just very, very fixed on the fact that we had to add another body in the summer. And I know people won't like this conversation because it's going over all ground, but it is a thing, and it was a thing that a lot of people mentioned in the summer. You let Gini Wijnaldum go, it leaves you with one short. Now, I know Harvey Elliott has been converted into a midfielder, so it still gives you eight. The numbers thing wasn't a problem for me. Eight should be fine. Eight's not fine when you've got five of those who are injury prone, to say the least. And five of them have got, at least five of them have got a track record of missing a lot of games for Liverpool Football Club.
But so, nine's too many, Ian. And he couldn't sell any of them. But nine is too many.
You can't say nine is too many. But Harvey Elliott,
share the games out.
But I think it's context, O'Neill. So you look at the midfield makeup. You know Milner's near in the end. You know Harvey Elliott's a really, really young footballer. And listen, you can't legislate for that, but it is a contact sport, so it can happen sometimes, yeah, those injuries. But I just think they needed to have one more. You've let the lad go, who plays all the time. Now, people will say he plays all the time because he's available all the time. Part of that's true. Gini was always available, but he's also one of the most tactically astute, switched-on footballers that we had at the club. Not everyone likes Gini Wijnaldum. I never understood the fact that he had so many detractors. I'm not saying he's a footballer that's got everything, but I think a lot of the time we focus on things that they haven't got rather than thinking about the things they have got. And Gini Wijnaldum had assets that were as long as your arm. In football matches, such as Brighton, I say what Gini Wijnaldum does, he cuts off the fucking passing lanes. So they're not walking through Liverpool like they were walking through Liverpool at the weekend.
I'd love Gini Wijnaldum to have stayed, but I wanted to sign Tchouaméni towards the end of the window when Monaco went out to the Champions League. I felt that was the time to go and get him. But the truth of the matter is, part of that is because I was a bit of a Harvey Elliott sceptic, to be honest with you, the idea of playing him in centre midfield. But up to the moment he goes off against Leeds United, you're left going, hang on, this lad could get 20 games, 25, 30 games for us this season. I think if you're trying to build a squad, bring through young talent, have Milner's last season. I mean, is the argument you say to Milner, off you go now, mate, we need you to go a season early, because nine is just so many centre mids.
Possibly you say, and possibly you've got that argument, you've got to maybe juggle it a little bit till January. And listen, I can say, you know, let Chamberlain go, let someone go. It might not have been as easy as that, I understand, but you might have had to just cop for it until January and carry an extra one because of the context that Liverpool's midfielders, they miss too many games. That cannot be argued. Henderson is yet to miss really any games, but he's got a track record over the last 2 or 3 years where he misses about 3 months. We know Thiago hasn't lived up to it in terms of his availability. Great footballer, no arguments there, but he misses too many games. Fabinho on the slide misses games. Liverpool cannot afford to be without these midfielders.
I'll come back to you on it, because I want to investigate it properly. I'll come back to you then and bring Harriet and Ian in. I take the idea that they do miss some games out, but a lot of what he does, the manager, is around. Everyone in the squad knows their role. Everyone in the squad knows that they're going to get chances. Everyone in the squad also knows that there's the hierarchy and you know where that is as well. My thing about this is, I think it's easy for us, and I don't mean that you haven't thought about it, that's not what I'm saying, or that the people listening haven't thought about it, but I think it's easy for us to just think, just fucking get more footballers, eh? Whereas he's the one who's got to work with them all and manage with them every single day and work with them on the training camp and do all of that and also get his money's worth out of every single one of them. I think, you know, but for me, it's as much about the idea of everyone feeling like there's, that, for instance, if you get another one in, we might not have seen Tyler Morton play this season. Now, you can say that that doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but if Liverpool quite like the look of Tyler Morton and think he's playing games next season, they want to give him some chance in the League Cup. I think we can all, my point here, Ian, is just, I'll let you come back here. My point here is that we can always end up going, especially after last season, when there was an issue at centre-half where they didn't have enough of them. I think you can always end up going, just get another fucking boss footballer in, and not think that that comes with a whole series of other knock-on effects and decisions. I think ultimately Liverpool could possibly do without one of Chamberlain, Keita, or possibly even Jones on loan for a season or something like that, and getting another really steady type of centre mid who's dead reliable, don't get me wrong. But if the offers aren't coming in, or if Liverpool don't want to let them go, or you've got a homegrown thing around Chamberlain, I think they'll have factored all this in, is my point, and they've decided what they've decided. It's just that I completely take the idea of what we don't need is centre mids looking leggy, because we ask centre mids to fucking run loads. Yeah.
That's my issue with it, because, and sorry, I will let other people come in a minute, I realise I'm taking up all the time here, but we ask so much of them. We ask so much of them, and that's the point, Neil. So I think there was a lot of questions over, you know, the Harvey Elliott thing. It looked like it could work, to be fair, but because he's such a young footballer, I think it was hard to hang your hat on that. I'm not sure he trusts Chamberlain at all, to be honest. And I think there's a bigger conversation about Oxlade-Chamberlain, where I think you will still see flashes, but he looks like he might just be a bit of a busted flush now. I'm not too sure. He's 28 years of age, and I just don't know whether he's going to get back to those levels. Now, Liverpool might know that because they're working with him every day. The Tyler Morton thing, I get it, but Klopp said himself, he's quite a way off, physically, from being able to sustain a run in the first team. And I just think, without Fabinho, there's a real lack of balance in that midfield. And I think Gini Wijnaldum, whilst you wouldn't necessarily say you'll play him in the six, he was so clever as a footballer that he could do bits everywhere. And the thing he would do, I talked about passing lanes before, and Harriet touched on this before, Liverpool look like they're one short of a footballer who can control the midfield in terms of just looking after the football for 5 or 10 minutes when it comes under pressure. I don't think Curtis is that lad, because, and I like Curtis, but I think there's times where he just chews it a little bit. Now, he's 20 years of age. A midfielder will go on a journey between the ages of 20 and 22 where he will look significantly different. Declan Rice being a prime example. At 22, he now looks like a Rolls Royce. I'm not comparing the two footballers, by the way. But I'm just saying they'll have that journey in their early 20s. And I think Curtis can go on a journey where he becomes a really, really important player for Liverpool. But I think you'll see games like the weekend, and you'll see games like a Porto, where you'll just get a 4 out of 10. You might get a 9 out of 10. And that's just where I felt Liverpool have left themselves a little bit short. Now, I'm not suggesting it's like the centre-half thing, because they were out for the whole season. We're not at that. It's one game. I understand that. But I just felt like this was in the post a little bit, where they may get bitten on the arse 2 or 3 times over the course of a season because they're lacking one in that middle of the park.
I agree with elements of what you're both saying, with the caveat that sometimes people just have a bad day. And I think Klopp, you can't sort of compensate for the fact that Curtis Jones isn't going to have a good day, and then Kate is going to get injured, and then Oxlade-Chamberlain's not going to come in and make an impact. And I think sometimes you think, okay, yeah, we're 8 midfielders. I agree, we could have done with keeping Wijnaldum. We gave away the player that was the one that was most reliant, especially last season when we really needed it. But also, like, you're not compensating. You know, after that Porto game when Jones played really well, you wouldn't have had any doubts about him then playing and going on a bit of a run and having a really good season. It's not worked out like that yesterday. Maybe he's had too much game time, maybe there's other elements around it. But then also, you look in the team yesterday, like Bobby Firmino's been there years, he's a really experienced player, he had an off day. So then what are you doing when you have players like, do you then say, right, Jota's got to come in the next game and stuff? I just think there's an element of, we've played a lot of football, we had come off the back of a really good result last week, and some players are just not in that mindset yesterday, and that's a, it wasn't even yesterday, was it?
No, it's fine.
Whenever it was, this weekend, and what can you can't really say that that's Klopp's fault. It's just everyone having a bit of an off 60 minutes, as it turns out.
Yeah, well, Klopp's spoken quite freely about the fact he didn't like the body language on the pitch. So, you know, it's something about the player's mentality at that point. But I'm somewhere between the two stands. We did, obviously, quite a few gutter shows during the summer. And I said quite a few times that we probably, you know, if we were letting Genie go, not knowing that Elliot was going to be converted, obviously not knowing that Elliot was then going to be crocked very quickly. But if we were letting Genie go, we needed to replace because we appeared heavily stacked in midfield last year. But we ended up playing with three fit midfields quite a bit. And that was because we were playing two lads at the back who then got injured. So we did end up down to the bare bones. We're back down to the bare bones again. And completely with what Neil said before, the idea has obviously been Curtis, take him off on 55, put Chamberlain on. Yeah. And that's great. But then you look at it and go, okay, well, Curtis is having a nightmare. Who's your sub? Yeah. And your only sub is, are we going to put Minamino in a centre mid? And then, sorry, bear with me one sec before I forget this bit. because I will.
It's all day, sorry.
If we need a ninth player, well, we weren't going to guess somebody who was going to be a Fabinho, because if Fabinho's injured, Henderson's going to do it. Tyler Morton may well be the next Fabinho. We need somebody who's going to be another Fabinho. So it would have been one of the number eight ones, for better term. So who was it going to be? Who were we linked with that actually moved? Sal Neguez. What's he done? He's played twice for Chelsea and he wasn't very good. So we were getting him for 40 million, apparently. They got him on loan and aren't using him. There was no one there to bring in. So I'm directly between the two stools on this.
Linked heavily with Bissouma.
Linked heavily, but also the one of the ones I think, for instance, as an example, is your for instance someone like a Ward-Prowse who can also do it before you're at right back. Like I think that's what you if you're looking for at someone else, the idea of someone who can maybe make play. But I would have liked the young lad at Monaco. I'll say it again. I really would have liked the young lad at Monaco. I also. Even while he has performed well in the middle of the park, I am genuinely a bit of a sceptic about Elliot there, but I think that's Elliot being... I think they want to find another way to get Elliot into the team because in two directions, Cade Gordon being one and Mo Salah being the other, it becomes difficult to, you know, for Elliot to get the right-hand side berth that he might have expected.
Behind a lad who basically, touch wood, never gets injured.
And he's the greatest player in the world. Yeah. And then the other one being Cade Gordon, as I say, in a League Cup-y context as well. But I do feel like if there's a problem for me, I'll go back to Ian Ryan and then I'll come back around again one more time because I've got another question for you. I do feel if there's a minor problem, Ian, I feel as though you need two of Henderson, Fabinho, Thiago and Keita on the pitch at all times. And I wonder if we've almost got, for the way we play, one too many who's progressive, progressive. Yeah. And that's where the balance is wrong for me. It's not about whether or not it's eight, and I take the fitness question as well in there. But for me, I think I'd rather have five that I'm prepared to describe as a really safe pair of hands and three of the other and not the other way around. Although maybe I'm being a bit unfair on Milner in there as well. But you take my general point. I'd rather have someone else who I feel could play in the two in a 4-2-3-1. Than the idea of maybe being overstocked with lads who are going to be 10 goals, 10 assists if they've got 38 games.
No, I agree with that. And I don't think, you know, the numbers thing is not necessarily the thing I'm kind of going on about here because, you know, I think Phil Blundell said that on shows, you know, eight should be fine, but it's not with this set of players because we know why. But you're right, Neil, I think it's the balance for me. It may have been difficult to shift a Chamberlain for obvious reasons. Maybe you could have got him out on loan. Only the club will know that. And that's where I'm thinking, you know, could they have just done something where they just muddle through a little bit with an extra one till January and then try and do something then and just be a little bit more front foot with it and thinking about, you know, some of the potential pitfalls, given what's gone on behind them last season. And as I say, I'm not comparing it to the centre-half situation because that was insane and it was lads out for the full season and this is one game we're talking about. So it's important to not throw the baby out with the bathwater and remain a little bit calm about it. But it just felt like this, the balance just didn't feel right to me. And your point about if you want to change the system, the 4-2-3-1 thing's interesting. But I think... You know, it almost relies on, I think, Henderson and Fabinho being fit to do that. Now, maybe Thiago could do a little bit of that.
Absolutely.
He probably could, but it's really hard at the minute to see Thiago getting a sustained run of football matches. Now, we know he can do that. I actually prefer Thiago a bit further forward, if I'm honest. I think he's better further forward because I think he's got that ability just to open up teams when you really need him to. And I think he's... I mean, I love the player, but just getting them on the pitch is a problem. And that's the same for a lot of those lads. And that's where I keep coming back to. Just could we just have done with one more just to cover ourselves a little bit? And people might go, well, you know, you can't just stockpile footballers. I get that. It may well have been a short-term thing. Get yourself through till January and then reassess and see where you go from there.
Just one question for you, and it might be involved. You mentioned Phil there, Mr. Phil's of the line around nine subs and how nine subs doesn't actually help anyone. It just looks like it helps people, but all it is two more lads on the bench and then you're picking three. Only three can come off it. I want to park that objection to what I'm about to say. What happens in the football match for Tyler Morton to come on?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you. What has to happen in the football? Like, he's on the bench, so what has to happen in the football match for Tyler Morton to come on? Or is this as simple as, you were great against Preston again, we want to show you what a first team game at Anfield's like, you're knocking around the changes, that's what it is, you're not really going to be part of it. But I think if a footballer is on the bench, it is valid for us in this format here to ask the question, what has to happen for Tyler Morton to come on?
I don't think anything, unless there's another injury. I don't think you're going to see Tyler Morton. I think he's there to make up numbers in part, and also for the experience, and because he's being rewarded for a good run in the League Cup. But ultimately, I don't think that Klopp thinks that he's going to come on and make a big difference or bring that experience. Because ultimately, yesterday, I felt like what we lacked in that midfield was any sort of defensive experience. Like, that sounds mad because the players that were on, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain is not a young player, but he hasn't had the game time to have that consistency, which we really needed yesterday. So Tyler Morton's not going to bring that. So I think even if you took Ox off and you put him on, or you did something with Jones, I'm not sure how much difference that really makes.
4-0 up with 10 minutes to go and you've only made two changes. At that point, Tyler Morton gets a home debut.
That wasn't the reality, sadly, was
no,
it?
So. No, but that's what would happen. If we're going with the hypotheticals, that's what would have to happen.
I think if it went to 3-0, though, I still don't think, you know, if that Manny goal counts and then, you know, that Salah goal goes in, I still don't think we see him.
Oh, yeah, that's 3-0 in that game we wouldn't have. But if we were 4-0 up with 10 minutes to go, then that's when he gets his debut. I think that's the only way he gets on the game.
It's like someone like a Chamberlain now. He looks like a footballer who just needs to find, you know, a run of games. But Liverpool can't afford to give Chamberlain a run of games. Now, they may have to if they've got injuries, but we hope Thiago and Fabinho aren't too far away. But he just looks like a fella who would have benefited from a loan period because of the need to maybe play 8 out the next 10 just to find his rhythm.
Not dissimilar to Lingard for United last season.
Potentially.
He probably should have been built on a bit, if we're all honest about it, Lingard.
And I think Chamberlain in a certain team, in a certain role, could still do someone a job. And maybe that is Liverpool at some point, but there's no signs really, apart from the odd flash, that he's got that in his locker to put a number of performances back to back where you think he's going to be someone who is a real, real asset for this football club. And as I said before, I think there's certain players at the club, and it's back to your point before, Neil, where it leaves you slightly unbalanced. They need to be in a team that's got enough support behind them to let them do their best work. And I think Jones is almost a bit of a hybrid, where I think he can do stuff deeper, and I think they're working on him, and I think they're developing him, and I think they almost maybe see Jones as someone who's got qualities where they can adapt them. Yes, he can go forward, he's got the flair bit, and you've seen times last season where he can look after the football really, really well. But with Chamberlain, I've never seen that in his game, the ability to maybe sit a little bit deeper and dictate and look after it. He's very much off the cuff, he's full throttle, he bursts through, he gets shots off, he runs in behind, he can do all of that. But I just don't think we're anywhere near to seeing that from Oxlade-Chamberlain.
I think one thing with that is that Klopp's priority is not to make Oxlade-Chamberlain or Curtis Jones a better player. His priority is to win football games. So you're never going to see Oxlade-Chamberlain having a run of 8 or 9 games because Klopp wants to improve him. Obviously, his priority is also to look after every individual player and make sure they're developing.
It helps if they're playing well.
Exactly, but he can't do that at the sacrifice of winning the football game, which having Oxlade-Chamberlain on 8 or 9 games, we might not do. Yeah. So
that's why he doesn't get a run of games.
Of course. He doesn't, that's absolutely why.
He's got time to develop Curtis Jones. There isn't time to develop a 28-year-old player.
And he probably feels like he's tried a lot in the last few seasons to do that and it's not come off. So what's next for him, I guess?
We've done a lot of midfield here, Ian, but for me, the next phase of this is, there's no denying the fact that the defence, to me, between 35 and 65, we got closer and closer to 65, the defence was the sixes and sevens. The still, and you've got to be careful with still photographs in football matches, but the still photograph of Andy Robertson effectively 5 yards deeper than Virgil van Dijk through the period of their goal it wasn't the only time in this game and in other games recently where there's been a definite hint of that. Konate also didn't really look settled. I thought Brighton were really clever in that what they don't do really until they get into the very, almost as close to the penalty area as you can, is engage with Liverpool centre-halves. Yeah. They almost just let Liverpool centre-halves be islands on their own, and they make the football match happen everywhere else. So they're either, Liverpool centre-halves have either got to let themselves be pulled out to go and engage, or they've got to stay but not be involved in the game. I think that's all really, really clever, but they're not the first side to do that. I'd argue Atletico Madrid do that. I'd argue there's been another couple of sides that have done that this season quite cleverly. I think Brentford do it at times as well. Tony, a slightly different option there, engages with Matip, but no one engages with Van Dijk. My point here being is Liverpool don't defend well, and they don't defend well. You know, you can talk as a unit, and you can even say about the wide attackers, do they filter back? We've talked about the midfielders, but I don't think we walk away from that feeling as though any of the back four, including Virgil himself, you feel as though they were in any way, shape or form at a 7 out of 10 level.
No, they weren't dominant. They didn't defend as a unit. I've not seen the photo of Andy Robbo yet, so I can't really comment on it. I'll need to hunt it out.
He's nearly in the cop.
Is it? That's
how fucking deep he is.
But the thing is, Robbo's the easiest one to solve in this because he's had a lot of football over the last 3 years. And we proved at the beginning of the season that Tsimikas is a good deputy. So stick him in for a few games, give him a rest. It's not dropping him. Just give him a rest for a few games. Virgil has come back and played far more football than we expected. So maybe it's time for him to have a little bit of a rest.
I think if Klopp put Tsimikas in yesterday and we get the same result, a lot of the blame gets put on the fact that Robertson's not in. That's the issue that Klopp has got, hasn't he? So.
Yeah, and it's always going to be the way somebody's going to be a scapegoat at some point. Yeah. Again, I don't know how much the defensive problem was in midfield because the fullbacks are pushing up as they're supposed to. And then the midfield was being completely cut through and everyone is playing into the corners of the pitch. And they've got us figured out, but they're playing like the diagonals into the corners of the pitch and not even high long diagonals. They're playing through the midfield.
Yeah, I think the Andy Robertson thing, he's been unbelievable for this club. So let's have it right. He's going through maybe a bit of a tough time at the minute. You know, there's almost that legacy thing where you could see last season he was dropping very deep. Now, some of that might have been because he was covering for the likes of, you know, a Reece Williams or an Nat Phillips, and he's thinking about being on the cover. But he's still doing it now. He's still very much deeper than the rest of the defence at times. And, you know, that was an example on Saturday where, again, he's just dropped in. And, I mean, dropping in is one thing. I thought the tackle, actually, that he goes to put in was really poor as well. It was a nothing tackle, to be honest. And don't get me wrong, Trossard comes in, takes it really, really well.
You'd almost rather he gives a pen away by trying to take everything, I think, in hindsight. Yeah. It's a really funny one, that, where watching it in real time, I was like, there was something uncertain about it. And one thing that I think, and I think it's the same thing with the positioning, this is a wider thing that I'm going to just sort of circle back onto in a minute, but I think that there was just that little... In that action, there was just maybe when the manager's talking about body language, I think this Liverpool team, and Robertson's a great example of it, he's epitomised it at times, it looks its best when it's very certain. Mm. And there's something about that tackle which is just all a little bit, I'll dangle here and hope that this sort of comes my way, rather than just, right, I'm cleaning this lad out, and if I have to leave the referee with a decision to make, that's where we are.
Yeah, it's so not like Robertson as well, because he's the exact opposite of that. He's a full-blooded footballer who loves a tackle, and I know it's in the box and we've maybe got to be careful where it is, but as you said, Neil, you know, you'd almost feel, well, you know, rather than kind of do that, just kind of, you know, die trying, so to speak, you know what I mean? And it just felt a bit lame, and, you know, from there it felt inevitable that was going to end up with the back of the net. I don't think Virgil's been at his best this season. I think there's certain games where you look at it and think he's still on that road to recovery, and I think that's fine because he was out for such a long time. Just to expect him to walk in like he's been there as an ever-presence was probably a little bit unrealistic, and he's so good and he's such a good organiser at times that I think you've almost got to, you still want to keep playing him because of what he brings to the team. And you see it for the first goal, but he's still got that switch, which is really, really important to us, and we benefit from that. I think Matip's been our best centre half, to be honest, so I'm surprised he didn't play. I know you've always got to wrestle with the injury thing with Matip. Konate, for me, I think there's lots and lots to be pleased about with Konate, and I think at Old Trafford he's really good, apart from the first 5 minutes. but you can almost expect that because he's coming into a new team. The one thing I've noticed with him, which they may have to look at a little bit, is he does tend to follow man and ball a little bit, and he vacates his space a little bit too much, where he does it for one of the goals as well, but he just leaves the area and he's gone to engage, and he's followed and people have gone in behind him. And I think that's something Liverpool will have to work with and be conscious of. There's no doubt he looks like he's got all the characteristics of a great centre-half. He's big, he's massive, he's powerful, he looks quick on the turn as well. So there's lots to work with there, but that was something that just struck me. I see that little bit at Old Trafford, and I saw it again yesterday, and I think Liverpool are going to be mindful of it. And I think if there's a way of getting Matip in on Wednesday, I think he will do.
Henderson went mad a couple of times at Konaté, didn't he? He was just, I think for me, I don't know if this is more of a question rather than a statement, but do you think the fact that Konaté, I can't even say his name well, Konaté, we'll go with it.
Konaté.
Comes in and Virgil feels like he's sort of looking after him a little bit, means that he's not organising the rest of the back line as he would usually. And again, it's more of a question than a statement, but I feel like his organisational part of his game wasn't quite there. And you know, also with the fact, like Ian said, that he felt like he was just missing a yard of pace yesterday. And I think the fact that he's come back in and we've not every week said, you know, he looks like he's come back from an injury, it's quite astounding because he was out for such a long period of time. But yesterday I just felt like he wasn't at his best, and he could have organised the back line better, but also in himself played a little bit better. But that's to be expected because he was out for so long.
And that can be fair. I think Ian Salmon, that Konaté is, and you get the impression he's in time, he's charged to be aggressive, go and be aggressive, go and hunt it down, go and win it, is I think what they're looking for from him. But he has to pick his moments, and I think that's what Ian's sort of saying there when he's talking about following a man and ball. It is this idea that he's got to, every single time, it doesn't need to be done every single time. Yeah. There'll be some times where discretion's the better part of valor. Just step back in, hold your line, let someone else deal with it for a minute, and then it'll come into your area, and then you're going to go and win it this time. He's young, he's not got that many games of football in general in him, and he certainly hasn't got that many games for Liverpool in general in him. But then around that, you know, the manager is picking him because he's got to pick someone. He's got to have a project there. Someone, whether it's Gomez, is getting Gomez back fit, whether it's Konaté or whether it's persevering with Matip, he's got a decision to make. But I do think there is a bit of that, and I do think Brighton exploits it, and I think Trossard especially exploits it brilliantly. He knows when, he's almost tempting him, I think, at times, saying, come on, you want to come and win this from me, don't you? Come on, come over here. I think it's really good from Trossard.
Yeah, I thought Trossard was excellent throughout the entire game.
He really was.
Weirdly, I thought she was English up until the interviews after the match. Trossard sounds like comes from Devon or somewhere. You know, it's, couldn't get my head around that. It's all Alessandro, really. No, he was excellent. And Konaté is the one who's got the most of the likelihood at the moment to step out of the back four and leave that hole. And when your right centre-back steps forward and your right back is up the pitch because he has to be attacking, suddenly the entire right side is exposed for you. Well, you meet, at the same time, you're asking Virgil to manage him through the game. Well, Virgil's got to manage his own game. You've got to get Gomez fit and you've got to protect Matip's fitness. So we may have the four there, but it's still a little... I thought it was very weird that Nat Phillips didn't start in midweek. I thought, yeah. You know...
I don't understand why Matip's played then and then... He's not opting to start this weekend. That feels, started. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems an odd choice. They all need the game time, but...
I think that they all need the game time. I think it's as simple as that. And this is where there's something, Ian, in the general sense, to begin to round this bit off before we talk about Atletico. There's something for me where I am a big member, possibly even a sense of founder member of Draws Kill You. That is long been my position, certainly in a Manchester City-ish league. Draws kill you, and you can't start being obsessed with draws. The one thing I would say, this is still a Liverpool team who this calendar year have lost 6 consecutive home games. It's still a Liverpool team who last season lost 9, and we need it within the context of that. One of them was getting smashed 7 at Aston Villa. It's a Liverpool team who, yes, go on a 10-game unbeaten run at the end of last season and have now started this season with a 10-game unbeaten run. But I don't think in a couple of phases, players coming back from injury, the current situation in the middle of the park around injuries and players even there, when they come back, they'll be coming back from injuries as well. For me, the assurance that we've had, and this is where my Robertson sort of thing comes into this, while I do think that draws kill you, I think at the minute this is a Liverpool team, and maybe the manager knows it, that could just really do with continuing to not lose for a while. that it doesn't need that sort of, to have to clamber back from that little bit of adversity that another defeat would be, that it needs to have lost, completely shed the habit of losing games of football. So while I do think that draws do kill you, I do wonder if at the minute the manager's attitude is, we just need to keep this unbeaten run going for as long as we can. And then maybe in a few games' time, when a couple of players are back in contention in the middle of the park, when Van Dijk's gone up another level in terms of his recovery, maybe Gomez is closer, that's when we need to raise it one more time. I wonder if, rather than this be a, we've just got to go and win every game and get 114 points type of season, somewhere in the manager's mindset he's thinking, we need to get to that level, but we're not there yet, and whilst we're not there, we've got to manage ourselves.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm conscious that, you know, a lot of that chat here will have been, it'll have sounded quite negative, and I think you've got to keep bringing it back too. And I'm responsible for some of that. I spoke at length about, you know, the midfield issues, but you have got to keep reminding yourself that it's 10 games. It's only 10, there's 28 to go. This is a long season.
And the one 3 out of 3 in the Champions League, they're in the quarterfinal of the League Cup.
There's loads and loads of positives. I started the show off by talking about some of the positives. And Liverpool, as you said, Neil, Champions League, couldn't have done a better job, they're flying. But draws, yeah, of course, I think there's something that, you know, maybe we're a little bit scarred, 08-09, there's draws. You know, even the season where City pip us, I mean, there's those two draws, and it is only two, but the one at Old Trafford and the one at Goodison, and you're thinking, you know, draws again. But listen, that can happen in football when you come up against decent teams.
Draws kill us 13-14.
Yeah, it's 13-14. So there is a thing about, you know, sometimes too many draws. But then you look at Arsenal's invincible season, and they have a load of draws.
12 draws, wasn't it?
And then obviously they get 90 points, and, you know, their emphasis very much is just don't get beat. Just don't get beat, just keep putting points on the board and it'll look after itself. Now, obviously, we're up against two phenomenal teams, City and Chelsea. And I know City have the poor results, but there's no doubt they're still very, very capable of putting a massive run of games together. You know, 15, 16 games, you could see that coming. And Chelsea just don't concede goals. And I think that's where Liverpool have got to get the balance right. At the minute, it just feels far too easy to penetrate this Liverpool team. And Chelsea are in a spot where their fixtures have felt kindly. If you look at fixtures they've got and the injuries they've got, they've come at the right time. They've lost good players, but they've lost them at the time where you think, well, we don't concede any goals. We probably need to score one and we're going to win the football match. And they've still got plenty of lads who can still win football games for them. So Liverpool have to just maybe tweak the balance, I think. You know, there was a time where in 1920, if we went ahead, done, forget about it. You ain't coming back. Odd occasion, maybe. But we looked like we were in very much in control of football matches, and that's slipped a little bit. We've been a little bit more expansive at times, and there's benefits to that, but there's also negatives, and I think we're starting to see some of those negatives. And I think maybe the manager might just look at it and think, what can we do from a system point of view to shore us up a little bit, to make us look a little bit more solid? Because there's no doubt there's a theme in some games where teams are figuring us out a little bit during spells of football matches. I have to say, you know, Brighton deserve loads and loads of credit. We can talk about Liverpool's issues on the day, but they are a brilliantly coached football team. And I bet you there's one or two teams in the league who are looking at it and going, we shouldn't have turned our nose up at Graham Potter. He's a football manager who looks like he's on the rise. And I think one or two got a little bit snotty about it and thought, well, we'll go for this name, we'll go for that name, when there's a fella there who looks like he's doing wonders. And I think, you know, you look at their centre-halves. And what disappointed me, and I think Gibbo said this in the post-match, a lot of football game left to go and have a real go at them. 25 minutes to go. They protect the centre-half so well. Basuma was brilliant. And someone like a Duffy, who you think, you know, he struggled at Celtic, he's not particularly great on the ball at times. They protect them. And they're brave, by the way. He asks those players to be brave. They are constantly brave. And I know they get away with one, but they are constantly brave. They do not waver from that. And they deserve huge credit. I know they get picked off their own by City, but if they continue to play like that, they'll have far more good results than they will bad ones.
In the wider league context, Ian Salmon, there's, for me, at some point, there's the run. Liverpool will need to go on the run. What is the run? The run could be win 13 on the bounce. The run could be win 17 out of 19. The run will be the run. The one thing that's in my mind, in a Klopp 17, 18, 18, 19 sort of sense, 1920s, obviously its own thing because they win 26 out of 27. It's all the fucking run. The run is not stopping anytime soon. But is that I think Liverpool have been very, very strong from when you return from the next international break through to the third round of the FA Cup. I think if you look back on all of those seasons, Liverpool tend to win almost all of those games. After Klopp realised what that challenge was, Liverpool have been relentlessly good in that period. But they will need the run, and this is the point that at the minute you can have a couple of draws, Man City and Chelsea at home, all right, Brentford a bit weird, Brighton, yeah, it hurts right now. But they're going to need the run. And it's whether or not they've got it in them, because I think that is what's one of, if not two of, Manchester City, Chelsea and Liverpool are going to have the 13 games where they win 12 of them, the 18 games where you win 16 of them. One of them's going to do that. I think possibly two of them do that, and that's going to define this season, and Liverpool need to be ready for it because it's coming. Because you can say it's 28 games, but you begin to run out of them, if you know what I mean, yeah. To do the run.
Yeah, well, as you said, it's, you know, it is that whole thing of the draws kill you, and we don't have space for mistakes, but you know, it's easy for us to be negative. It's easy to worry about the shape of the midfield. It's easy to worry about form when we're currently unbeaten in 30 games in all competitions. We're not losing games of football, but we've dropped two stupid draws at the moment. That's all it is. We've dropped two stupid draws. We can't do it again for the rest of the season. I've thought from about 2 weeks in, if we want to win the league this season, what we have to do is we have to beat both City and Chelsea at their place. I think that's an absolute given. I think that is how we win the league. It will be that necessary, because they both look... City have had a couple of odd results. Losing Spurs first day of the season, didn't they?
Yeah, it looks heavy now, doesn't it?
That looks a bizarre result now. But they are just going to keep going. Chelsea look absolutely even relentless and will continue being relentless. They're just going to keep going all the way through. We're going to have to beat both of them away, and that's how we win the league. But I think all three teams are capable of massive things. I think we're a fantastic football team. I think we genuinely are. I think it's easy to forget that we are still the best iteration of Liverpool. 3 years ago, we were the best iteration of Liverpool you've ever seen. And all we've lost from that team is Wijnaldum and Lallana. And we've added Thiago. And, you know, Harvey Elliott would have been a fantastic player to add. We're not going to see him for most of the rest of the season. We've had a Jota who scores goals. We're in a good position. We just need to protect ourselves a bit more.
Okay, at the Anfield Wrap, we've now added a food bank collection point at Avenue HQ. We're in Avenue HQ. It's opposite the Open Eye Gallery on Man Island. This winter, the pandemic taking its toll and the government ended a £20 boost to universal credit. There's many families who are facing tough times, very tough indeed in the run-up to Christmas. Costs are on the rise too. Inflation, fuel and energy all making a huge impact. Citizens Advice has warned 1.5 million working people on universal credit could be pushed into hardship this winter. So we've long supported the Fan Support and Food Bank's initiative at the Anfield Wrap. I collect donations at Liverpool and Everton matches for the North Liverpool Food Bank, but we want to also help now with one for Knowsley, Knowsley Food Bank. So it's at the entrance of Man Islands Avenue HQ. We've set the drop-off point there. So anything that you've got, any donatable, non-perishable food that you can manage to do, if you're around Man Island, we're just there. If you happen to be passing by, there's a Tesco opposite across the road, and I can promise you it is now easier to cross the Strand. I'm not going to say it's easy to cross the Strand, but it is easier to cross the Strand. So donations of any size can make a really, really big difference. So it will be at the front of the Avenue HQ building. We'll be ensuring it gets itself over to Knowsley. So if you've got the opportunity to donate to that, please do so. Also, subscribe to the Anfield Wrap if you want to get all the best build-up towards Atletico Madrid. And then as it goes from there, West Ham United, and then into the big run before Christmas, it's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. Or you can download the app from the App Store and then go from there. There are free tokens if you want to try it before you buy. And trying before you're buying is very, very sensible indeed. So whatever you fancy there, whichever direction you want to go in.
Don't try it before you buy. Just buy.
Just buy, says Harriet. I told you, greatest living southerner. I wasn't lying at the start. We will get ready now for Atletico. Talk about it briefly before rounding all this off. Harriet, ultimately first game a couple of weeks back, we get to see them do what we talked about Brighton doing quite effectively well, which is play away from our centre halves, exploit the gap, look to counter really, really quickly. It nearly works for them. You know, it's a 3-2. The manager calls them three dirty points. It's not necessarily 3 points Liverpool deserve, but it is 3 points that Liverpool get on that occasion. That said, therefore, I don't really see, and maybe I'll be wrong, but I don't really see Atletico Madrid changing from that game plan. I'm expecting, if anything, they will try to bed in and counter even more.
I don't think they're going to change their game plan at all, because they know that they can score against us, and they'll just want to score more and concede less, and they know that's how they can win the game, because that's how football works. I mean, they're ultimately a very good side, and they'll know that coming to Anfield is a very hard place to come, and they won't want to sort of change their attack too much. A lot changes in a week of football, doesn't it? I think it's a really good thing that it's now a Champions League game. It's a different competition. We're obviously in a really good position in the group. This is a big opportunity for us to just sort of put the weekend to the back of our minds, move on to the next one, and ultimately I think if we win this, there's not really any doubt that we're gonna go through to the next stage of the competition, and then you kind of don't have to worry about it as much for the last two games, and around that Christmas period when all our players will need a break, they'll get one. So yeah, I think the last time they were at Anfield was just before the pandemic, wasn't it, when mad game, and I think there's a lot of sort of narrative around that and them returning and everything, and the pandemic is still going on and the football games still carry on. But yeah, they'll be well up for it, and I don't think they'll change their plan too much.
I'm pleased Harry mentioned that game, Ian, because ultimately I think it's one of Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's best games for Liverpool. And if I wonder, it's worth remembering the five sub thing here. I think there's a little bit of an argument if Liverpool can do it in this one, to see if they can get one of Thiago or Fabinho to start, pick Henderson, and then I'd start, and off the back of the conversation we just had, it seems unlikely, I'd start Chamberlain. And then you've got the idea of having either a Fabinho or Thiago, ideally, able to come off the bench, plus Jones able to come off the bench over the course of the 90 minutes. Use the fact that you've got five subs. Hell, maybe even have Tyler Morton on the bench. But give yourself the moves there. I would be interested in giving Chamberlain what would become his third game in 7 days, off the basis of, you've played against these before, lads. You were excellent last time. Go and do it again.
No, and listen, I'm very conscious of the conversation we've just had, but I think there's a case for doing that, because, like I said before, there's certain football matches and certain systems, if he can get it right, where it does suit Chamberlain, and where he hasn't got to worry about what's going on behind him as much. And if you have got a Henderson, Fabinho behind you, that does solve an awful lot of problems. So you can totally see the case for that, Neil. Absolutely. I think the interesting one for me is what he does at centre-half, because I'm not quite sure where we are with Matip. So there's games he's playing in that I wouldn't have thought he'd have played in. So Harriet mentioned Preston before. I wouldn't have had him anywhere near it. And I'd have played him against Brighton, and I probably would have rested him against Atletico with the view that West Ham is on the horizon and I want him in that game. But then he might look at West Ham and go, well, you know, they've got a physical presence up there. Maybe Canate's kind of built for that kind of battle with an Antonio. I don't know, but I thought he would have maybe wanted Matip, and he still might do. But you'd always think, you know, two games in 4 days, can he do that? Possibly. So there's a question around defence, and then I think up top, I don't think he'll maybe veer too much from what we saw at the weekend. I think it might well be Firmino, Mane and Salah. I know there's a Jota question. I think Bobby did have a really, really poor game on the back of an outstanding game at Old Trafford, by the way. Nothing went right for him first half. But I just think, because of what he gives you a little bit more off the ball and his ability to drop in at times, it may be Bobby that he goes with up front.
What are you doing? I'm starting Joe Gomez as well, by the way.
Oh, that's a big shout.
Starting Joe Gomez.
Hardly any miss. I'd be Van Dijk and Matip. Are you thinking Joe Gomez at right back?
No, I'm starting Joe Gomez at centre half. I think Van Dijk and Matip really struggle at Atletico much more than any other. I think Keita gets the big sub at half time, and everyone talks about that. I don't think either centre half play well, and I don't think they anticipate danger particularly well. And there's a fuckload of danger going around. And the one thing Joe Gomez does, I think, is panic really well. I think he's a really good, my God, thinking about to go badly wrong centre half. I'll plan for that rather than look to be really front foot. I think the only way you're going to get Gomez back to where you want him is by literally giving him games of football. So I off the back of the fact that he played last week against Preston, I'd bring him in this one, because if not, you're basically going to say he's going to play against Preston and then he's probably not going to play another game until the very end of November. So he's basically not going to have played any football for 5 weeks. I think you've got to give Gomez one of the next two if you want to be able to use Gomez in the really busy run that's coming the other side of the next international break.
I get that. I think it's a difficult one now, because I think playing him against Preston, his pace didn't look there. He looked like he was short.
I thought he looked better second half. I thought he looked a lot quicker second half. First half, he was rolling a bit more, and then he was
super
stride.
But the team as a whole felt better second half. There was more shape to it. I don't know. I think Matip and Van Dijk, because I wouldn't fancy anyone that's not 100% against Griezmann and Felix at the moment.
Doesn't start Van Dijk against Milan. The manager doesn't start Van Dijk against Milan.
I think it's a really tricky one. I take the point on Gomez because, I mean, I love Joe Gomez. I think when he's at his best, I honestly, he's right up there as, you know, one of the best centre-halves in the league. So I feel like we've seen that for a while for obvious reasons because of the injury. The Preston first half worried me a little bit, but I take the point nearly. He's much better second half. It's really tricky because, you know, the only way he gets back to that level is by playing games, but will Liverpool risk it in a Champions League game where they have got a bit of wriggle room, but at the same time, I think they'll want to put it to bed, and they put it to bed if they win. I don't know. I don't see him starting Gomez, but I'd love to see Gomez get back to the levels that we know he's capable of. I just don't know whether our first 45 against Preston will be sticking in the mind, whether they're a little bit worried that if he demonstrates anything like that in the first 45 against Atletico, the game could be taken away from them.
I mean, you're right, but we can see two in the first half against Atletico anyway, with Matip and Van Dijk.
We've got to factor in.
They're really good.
These teams have got good footballers, as have lots of others, so they can make mugs out of anyone, and that can just happen. You've got to cop for it. So, you know, whoever you play, they could give you a tough time. You know, you're right about the first leg. Wasn't particularly great. You know, they were cutting through us. I think.
But again, we were incredible for the first 25.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we start. Well, back to that. You know, we managing games of football. We get off to a really good start, and then we let them back in. But
I'm not going to ask you for a prediction. I am going to though ask you a slightly moody question. Would you take a draw?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
take a draw.
It's 10 points. Yeah. So
10 points is pretty much jumped.
Yeah, in the context of the group, yeah, and in the context of the mentality of the team, it wouldn't be ideal, but it would probably see us go through. So from that perspective, it'd be fine. But
a draw would see Liverpool be 5 points clear of Atletico Madrid, depending on what Porto do, somewhere between 5 to 7 points clear of Porto. Sorry, 5 to 2 points clear of Porto. Porto, if they win, go to 7 points. Milan in there as well. But Milan are at home to Porto. I'd take a draw all day.
Yeah.
I'd take a draw all day. A draw would be absolutely fine in this one. But anyway, Harry just wants to win. I told you, greatest living Southern. I'm going to keep saying it. Thank you very much to Harry O'Brien, to Andy Heaton for producing, Ian Ryan and Ian Salmon. It has been your Anfield Wrap this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. Sports Social Podcast Network.